how did you go from studying biochemistry in university to being a DevRel Docs engineer?
Okay, that's a very strange story, but it's not one I try to like shy away from the whole story because it's not very cool. Second row, as I usually do, and then I see this tweet on my phone, I'm like, yeah, okay. And then I see the message and I'm like, I need to finish this class. So I'm still like looking at the class and lectures I'm teaching, and then he's like, yo, give me your details, your address. And it took like 7 minutes between me standing up when the class was done and then walking to the nearby bank. And yeah, I got the alert and I'm like, wait, I have to buy a laptop. So guess who I called the first one? I called the professor and I'm like, yo, I have a laptop now. No, you don't have enough experience.
But like, now you know. A quality sample on Smash Magazine where you can submit.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, I was like, okay, now you know. So I applied and then.
My name is Esther Adebayo, and on my tech journey with Esther, I sit down with tech folks to talk about how they've been able to handle rejections, overcome obstacles in their careers, and really cut through the hype. From coding mistakes to battling rejections, balancing work life, and even doing phenomenal things, my guests will share everything raw and real on my tech journey with Esther. New episodes drop every week, so you don't want to miss out.
Hi Fortune, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I'm so glad that we get to have this chat today. Been looking forward to, you know, this episode, and it's finally here. So how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm actually quite good. It's been a rough couple of days, but great. The rain and all that.
Okay, it's good to have you. So before we go into our conversation, I have a quick icebreaker. We always have icebreakers before the beginning of every, you know, conversation. So we're going to be playing a simple trivia game of three questions.
Okay.
Really chill questions. So
yeah.
The first one is, what is always coming but never arrives?
Time. Well, I think tomorrow or the future, one of them.
Tomorrow. Tomorrow is my answer. Yeah. Cool. What can be broken but is never held?
Records.
you can hold records.
No, I mean records, like for example, the Guinness World Record, for example. You can break it, but you can't really hold it.
Okay, that's actually a good word. That's a smart word.
My answer
is promise. Promise, like you can break a promise, but you never hold a promise.
Ah, that was interesting.
I like yours, like records. You can break a record, but you never heard it. Okay, so the final one is, what can one catch but is not thrown? You catch it but you don't throw.
Catch but not thrown. You can catch a flu.
Perfect.
Wait, is that the answer?
Yeah, cold.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Literally the answer, because you can catch a cold or a flu, but you know it's never thrown. So yeah, that's a smart one.
Oh, damn.
All right.
Okay, this is fun.
Yeah, that was fun, and you answered the question so like no stress, just straight to the point.
Yeah, I mean, like I figured like those are not exactly hard. I mean, they're like brain teasers, so
yeah, they're not supposed to be hard. Like, nah, this is just chill.
Calm. Yeah, maybe next time I'll make it harder.
Yeah, maybe next time. They're too simple for you. Like, you're just answering it with a breeze. Okay, Fortune, would you like to introduce yourself to those listening, those watching? Who is Fortune Ikechi?
So my name is Fortune Ikechi. I am a software engineer and a technical writer who primarily works as a docs and DevRel engineer. And if you're seeing this, I'm probably working at somewhere. I'll announce later. So so I am 20, I just turned 25 in March, and I've been in tech for, I think, since 2020, which is the COVID period. And yeah, I was in college then, or the university, like we call it here. I have a cat called Kuna. Yeah, she's the absolute love of my life. Yeah.
Fun fact.
Yeah, I do. And I do not watch football. I don't think that's a good fact, but yeah, I don't watch football. And I'm fairly good at table tennis, and I like working out.
Interesting. Why don't you watch football, though? Let me just...
Honestly, I have no idea. I think I just wasn't... I didn't grow up doing it, and now it's like, I don't know, it's just too weird, I would say. Maybe I'll try one of these days, just like finish a match properly.
So you're telling me that you don't have... I'm a football pro. I won't say I'm a football. I love football. I enjoy a good match. So you don't have any team you support. So when everyone is having hype right now, over the Premiership or Champions League, you're just like, what's going on with these people?
Yeah, I mean, I recently got a console, so I started playing FIFA 2-3, 2-4. And so I support Man City because I use it all the time. That's like literally the only reason.
That's because they are the best, so you always use it to cheat and win, right?
I mean, you cannot hate the player, you have to hate the game, though, so just saying.
Okay. Alright, so you said you work as a DevRelDocs engineer, and you know, you came into tech in 2020, so... How did you go from studying biochemistry in university to being a DevRelDocs engineer?
Okay, that's a very strange story, but it's not one I try to like shy away from the whole story because it's not very cool. But really, I don't know if that is my story. So back then, I came to school also. I joined school in 2018, right? And I was studying hard and all that. And then one of my friends, Prosper, you probably heard me talk about him. He works at Deimos at the moment. So Prosper basically told me, oh yeah, by the way, I'm working on this, that, PHP. And I'm like, yeah, cool, I want to learn. So he gave me a couple of programs. I was coding on my phone. And around 2019, I made a... No, I didn't even make a tweet. I think Scott Hanselman made a tweet, and then I replied that tweet, and I mentioned that, I'm learning tech with my phone, and I'd like to get a computer. And yeah, funny enough, he just like gave me, he's like, yo, I'll get you a laptop. And I'm like, is this a joke?
Really?
And then I still remember that tweet today. I was in math 110 class. I was just sitting in the second row, as I usually do. And then I see this tweet on my phone. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And then I see the message, and I'm like, I need to finish this class. So I'm still like looking at the class and lectures that teaching, and then he's like, yo, give me your details, your address. And it took like 7 minutes between me standing up when the class was done and then walking to the nearby bank. And yeah, I got the alert and I'm like, wait, I have to buy a laptop. So guess who I called the first one? I called the person. I'm like, yo, I have a laptop now.
And then so I got him like,
yes, like the next day I took a break from school and I went to buy a laptop.
That's so good. Wow.
Yeah, and I spent all of COVID learning. I jumped around a lot. I learned PHP and I did WordPress before venturing to React. I got this internship, and then the guy I was working with was like, oh, maybe you should learn React and JavaScript. And I went to front end. And then I started writing a couple of articles during the COVID period because I was like very free during that time. With writing the articles, someone saw a couple of them and reached out from Smashing. I wrote articles for Smashing and I did more articles for LogRocket, and I kept writing more technical contents, both to teach, for publications. It was really cool, fun thing. And 2021, I joined a company called Cityt based in the US. They basically build a kind of like a delivery app for stadiums, right? And so I joined, I was there for like 3-4 months, like 2020, yeah. 2020, I was there till 2021. I was there for like a long time, but I became really active with working in the core coding aspects for like 4 months. And then I joined Storyblock and left Storyblock, and now I'm somewhere else.
Are you a new company there? We'll look forward to the announcement.
Oh yeah, I've not announced that yet, but I will, I promise.
Okay, yeah, look forward to it. I know you also mentioned that you started working in 2020 for companies like Smashing, Maxine, you know, LogRocket, writing articles for them. Mm-hmm. So did they just reach out to you, or did you put yourself out there? But how exactly did you get like these freelance opportunities to write for them?
Yeah, so removing writing for tech generally, I'm a big believer. I mean, growing up was kind of intense. Right? Not just like for me personally, but for my family and everyone else. My parents had really high standards. which was really cool. But then, I mean, sometimes it can really get really intense as a young first-born child, who is a male child too. So it got really intense, and the only way I could express myself was by writing, right? And so I was writing on Medium back then. COVID came around, school was intense. I was, you know, the whole thing just bored under me one day. So it was around 4:03 a.m. I just sat down. I just took a bath. I came to the parlor and then I sat down in a chair. I had this rocking chair that my dad has. I sat down and then I said, you know what? I'm just going to write about everything that's happened for the past 1 year, right? The strike, school, the stress of it all. I'm going to write on it. So I sat down and I wrote this Medium post and I sent it out to Medium. And the first thing I wrote was, am I a developer? Because I was struggling to know if I should go into front end or the back end, what I should focus on. You know, those kind of decisions. Yeah. And there was no, oh, you could just play around. I felt I didn't have a lot of time. And again, remember that someone got me a laptop, so I felt I had to like really do well to impress
do
them.
So,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, I know this kind of, I was wrong, by the way. Scott just wanted me to just do good. So I wrote about all of that and I published it. When I sent it out, I think on Twitter, and then Big Brother and some other people replied and gave their advice, and I was like, okay, cool. I'm like, wow, people actually read these things. You know what? I'm going to publish another one. So I talked about my childhood, growing up, life, everything. So in one of the articles, an editor from Smashing Magazine read it and then reached out. He just like sent me a mail because I added my mail on the bottom side of my About Me page. So he sent me a mail and he's like, yo, I read your blog. Look at the link. This is amazing. I think you do well writing for us. Would you like to maybe talk more? Send me a mail. And I'm like, yeah, sure. So I wrote after like 5 attempts, I wrote my first draft for Smashing and it got published.
Awesome.
The day it got published, I was at home. And then I got this email, it's like, oh yeah, your article got published, by the way, check it out here, let me know if you have any thoughts. And I read it, I'm like, wow, this is my stuff. and then it did go published, and immediately I just used the same link to apply to Love Rocket, because I applied before and they were like, no, you don't have enough experience.
Now you know. A quality sample on Smash Magazine where you can submit.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, I was like, okay, now you know. So I applied, and then I literally sent a code mail because I didn't have a way. I just sent a code mail to the editor because when I was rejected the last time, he added his email. So I was like, you know what? Now you know. So I sent a code mail to the editor and he reached out. And I'm like, I'm tagging this person on the call, on the email. You can, he's going to set you up and all of that. It took like 3 days. And then I think on the fourth day, I was on the Log Rockets content board. I'm like, okay, cool. We're actually doing this.
Awesome.
So that really came in handy. I was basically writing. And then I was learning more stuff, writing. Whenever I learn new stuff, I just ask my editor, yo, do you think I can write on this? And they're like, yeah, sure. Send me a pitch. And then I send a pitch. And they're like, okay, cool. Then we write on it. And he's like, okay, now maybe something else. Or look at what we have. Or look into us publishing. I'm like, I can work with this. So I just learn more and then write more. And that was how 2020 literally went through. The COVID, the strike, everything just zoomed through that whole lens. Uh-huh. And then at some point, but that was how I started writing. So at some point, more people started reaching out on LinkedIn that, oh, I read your stuff on this blog. Would you like writing for us? And yeah, I kept writing, I would say. I even did a 3 months content stuff for NEAR, the NEAR blockchain, the education unit.
Okay.
Yeah, it was cool.
Awesome. It's interesting to hear that all of this happened during COVID. And, you know, I know how COVID was. It was very draining for a lot of people all around the world, and just the fact that, you know, you didn't let that get to you, you were still able to push through, you know, do a lot of things. It's very admirable. And also the power of community or Twitter, like you said, just putting stuff out there and tweeting and people, you know, retweeting really helps other people find your work. So yeah, I think it's important that as techies, you know, we use social media to advantage and just use all those platforms, because there's no point doing stuff and just keeping it, you know, no one is able to see, there's no visibility to your work. But for you, you took advantage of social media to draw more visibility to your work. So yeah, that's really good to hear. In terms of people getting started with technical writing, what would you say is one of the most practical ways that people can start? For example, for you, you just started writing about your own experience. That was how you started, right? Writing your own experience, writing about it, maybe sharing about tools you've used, things like that. So what would you say, in your own opinion, is the most practical way for people to just get started with technical writing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to be honest. Like, everybody's like journey is going to be different, right? For me, I say this thing where I tell my friends, I'm like, I think my name box a lot more than I give it credit for. Like, I mean, I talk about things I want to do, and then I try to like walk towards it as much as I can, and then I just let the whole thing go smooth. And somehow, okay, I'm a very big Christian, so Romans 8:28 kind of like works. At the end of the day, all things kind of end up working together.
Together for good, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and so for me, our advice, like, if you're learning something, just write about it. Like, there is not enough knowledge in the world. I mean, it looks like it with the rise of AI and other things, but there's nothing as big as experiences, right? Mm-hmm. There's nothing as big as images. I'm a big believer in, like, images and videos. For you to, like, see something or want it, you have to, like, see it. Or basically, when you, like, be something, you have to see it. So I wanted to be more, and I wanted to like keep working really hard. I wanted to like do all these great things because I had people that were doing it already, and then I could see them, I could talk to them, and that was like a big deal. I mean, now it's kind of difficult to talk to a lot of people online or like on Twitter. I mean, I understand why with the whole privacy and all that, but I think we should also, as much as possible, try to give like a free hand to people who are just coming up. As much as possible, because I could talk to Abdulaziz. He's like this, I'm older than he is, but then he's always going to be like my mentor when it comes to writing, because Aziz is like really, really good. And then whenever I wrote back then, I just send him the link, and then he looks at it and he's like, hey, maybe you should fix this. And I'm like, yeah, sure, the boss, because he was so good back then and he was like a big influence on me. I wanted to be a better engineer because I kept seeing how Big Brother argued about React with Richard on the timeline, and they're like, and I'm like, I don't understand these things, and I use the React every day, and it's so funny because I mean, someone is bashing what you're using. I'm like, I don't even see anything wrong here.
Wrong with you? Like, what exactly are they talking about?
I'm like, what are you talking about? What you mean this is bad? I'm like, oh wow. Yeah, I mean, I had times where I had this big bug in React, and Richard just jumps on in the middle of the night, and he's like, oh yeah, I see what you're doing. You're doing this wrong. Fix this, and it works. I'm like,
wow.
Yeah, how did you know this? So so write about the things you're working on. There are two things that happen when you write about things. You get to know it better, right? And that isn't the only thing that happens. You also get to teach other people. And there are people struggling with the things they're learning, right? That's one thing I've noticed. There are people struggling with the things you're learning. Even the best of tutorials does not work for everyone, right? Yeah. You go into certain docs and they're like, oh, this doc is so easy. And then someone is reading it and they're like, what is happening? And then you could be the one to make that simpler or easier to understand for that person. And that's the job like all of us have at the end of the day. That's just what I feel like.
Yeah, so I love your answer. More or less, like, the path is different for everyone, but just start with, you know, writing about things you use, and, you know, from there it just starts progressing. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And for you, when you're writing articles, what's your process like? I know for me, I try to just understand who exactly I'm writing for. That's like the first thing. Are they beginners? Are they intermediate?
Audience,
you know,
analysis.
Experts? Exactly, audience analysis. So for you, what's your process when you're writing an article? What would you say are the things you do?
Yeah, for me, I focus on the goals. Like, okay. I mean, articles do several things. Some educate, some give opinions, some teach, right? So it depends on what the article is actually all about. For example, hold up 1 second. For example, right now I'm writing this article that is kind of like building a to-do app with a system, right? And it's a to-do app. There's like so many to-do apps articles. But I figured, I think this would be easier for someone who is coming on board this new system, right? It's something that everybody has built and used, right? So the goal again is to educate, to teach. Mm-hmm. How does this whole thing work? Yeah, so, and after that, the audience analysis come in. Oh, who are these people? What are the target audience? How much knowledge do they have on the current system? How do I make it better? And yeah, that's like usually what I go through. And usually the last thing for me is, where do I publish this? Because I'm not very good at bombing everywhere. So I just send it on the blog. And I'm like, okay, cool. It's okay.
Do you have lots of your articles? Do you use Medium, Dev.io, Hashnode, or?
Yeah, mostly Medium. But over the years, I've not written a lot of personal articles. I just write for publications now. For different reasons, not just reasons. Yeah. But recently, it's just Medium. I'm trying to move all of my Medium articles to Substack, but That's taking a while.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. I know that when I was at, you know, Animals as a writer, writing was, you know, that was one of the places I really developed my writing skills. So one of the things I did then was, anytime I'm reading or listening to something and I hear a new vocabulary, I just have like a list of vocabulary on a Notion doc, list of vocabularies that I'm just like, oh, I'll add this to the next time. You know, next time I'm creating an article, I'll use this word, I'll use this phrase. So that's one of the things that I found to also help me, you know, improve my writing. Just taking notes of things that people are talking about, the words they use, and improving your vocabulary as well. All right. So I know very, very recently you were part of like a mentorship program on YouTube where you talked about, you know, how the impact of AI on technical writing. So what would you say are the best ways that technical writers can, you know, incorporate AI into their articles without necessarily just copying and pasting?
Yeah, I mean, like, one of the things we talked about is the use of using AI to like fix your grammar, right? I think everyone makes a mistake when it comes to grammar, and as much as we are really great at speaking English or just being better, right, than most people all over the world, it's still not going to be a language, I don't know, a day. And so you're going to make weird mistakes. And that's where AI can actually help you fix, for example. Yeah. And then without losing your voice as a writer, you could just like post and be like, oh, fix the grammatical errors on this page. It just fixes the errors and it's like, oh yeah, this is what a refined version would look like. Another thing is research. I'm a big believer in what Perplexity AI is building, right? The best is just like, I'd have to go to Google to just like find everything. I just be on Perplexity and I'm like, okay, yeah, let me know your thoughts on this. And then I can switch between different models and what their thoughts are. And then I get to see sources, references, all of that in one page. And that's a big deal for AI because, again, context is key and Perplexity somehow has figured that out. So research can really come in. Say if you're new to the subject or you're trying to get more insight on the subject. Another thing that AI can also do is actually to teach you. I've had to like look at things and I'm like, so look at it, read this page, let me know what you think, or reduce it, teach me like I'm in first year software engineer. And it does that. I don't know how, but then it does that and it's like, okay, cool, I understand better now. Cool, okay, Another thing is I also like try to ask, oh, I'm writing this article on this thing and what possible things, I'm looking at this subject or these parameters to cover in the article. What other things do you think a reader or a beginner or this particular set of parameters can or will need in my article? And they're like, hey, maybe you should add this one. I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, maybe I'll just take two from this list. And that's like
a short example
of several things that AI can help you do, right? And again, the idea is to make you a better writer, not just to like take away writing from you.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as you cannot just like dump and kick up a prompt generated text, no, none of those things.
Yeah.
But yes.
Okay. What I also say when using AI is not supposed to totally replace what you do as a writer or, you know, in whatever capacity. It's just supposed to supplement and give you that foundation where you can then build upon. And whenever I have to write articles, also one of the things I do is with AI, when I probably just come up with a draft, and when the draft is ready, I tell AI to improve on it, expatiate on it, and then if it gives me, you know, the result and I read it, it doesn't sound like me, I also just ensure that I, you know, give the article my own tone, my own touch, so that it sounds like me. So I think it's important when writing or using AI that don't try to make the AI, you know, totally replace you and the way you sound, but ensure that it still sounds authentic to you, it still sounds like you, even when you're using AI. Yeah. So do you have something? It seems like you have something to add to that.
Yeah, I mean, like, yes. Okay. Someone said, as much as, like, regardless of how smart AIs are, like, they'll never be like a human being. And then I laughed because that is so true. And yeah, as a writer, like, we all have different styles of writing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is, like, what makes us writers. Your way you put out information, that's what speaks to somebody. And AI already has like a guideline, like, oh, be this formal, be all that. Like, example, Grammarly, you can set, oh, be formal, be, and all those things.
Yeah,
those are like just
sure.
Guidelines. Exactly. All of those things impact the way the article sounds to the reader and to the average person reading it, or even to Google when they, you know, like do the whole indexing. And yeah, I think that's where more people should like try to figure out how to use AI without losing that section, right? Without looking into, oh, I'm gonna sound formal. I mean, even now, I don't use Grammarly to do certain things now because I'm like, this is going to mess up the whole idea.
Yeah, it's going to make you sound and use words that you would not normally use.
It just doesn't make sense, and that's like some of it. So I came to like trying to figure out, okay, how do I make the necessary edits, but also make sure that this is my stuff. I read this, I'm like, okay, this is me. I wrote this. And that's like something I feel every technical writer or every writer actually should try as much as possible to figure out for themselves.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good advice. You work now in DevRel and, you know, as a docs engineer. So DevRel is developer relations, and it really just focuses on building relationships between, you know, developers that use a product or developers that build the product and the community that uses this product. So how, you know, I think my question is, a lot of people in DevRel like me find the progression not very clear. You know, it's almost like you're in developer relations. It's not easy to progress. You're just in one particular field. So how did you go from technical writing to being a docs engineer? Because docs engineering is a very niche part of the whole broad developer relations. So what was that like? Did you just say, okay, nah, I want to focus on just docs?
Yeah, I mean, I remember like when I wrote my cover letter for my job application at Storyblock, one of the things I wrote was like, I wanted to be in a role that allows me to write code, but also to do a lot of, produce a lot of content, right?
Okay.
And that's what I did. And I think the docs engineering title came when I joined the company because they're like, okay, yeah, I mean, what you're doing is basically docs engineering. So you get to write code, you get to create content, you get to, you know, do all of that. It wasn't until a year later that I was like, okay, you know what, I just like transition fully to DevRel while doing docs engineering.
Okay.
And hence the docs and DevRel engineering. So honestly, I think it depends. I think all technical writers will understand code to a large extent, to a very large extent, in fact. In fact, to be a really good technical writer, you need to know how to code. Even if you don't do it actively, you should be able to understand what the whole process entails,
how to build.
Is that how to build certain software, how to do this, how to do that. And docs engineering comes because there's a need for better documentation with certain applications or certain platforms or even certain organizations and companies. And so the title, it doesn't necessarily matter as much as what the role entails. So you're writing code, you're producing template apps, templates, code blocks or code bases, you're creating content, right? You probably did someone else's code and look at articles. You're trying to make sure that, how do I answer a user's question with not just giving them, oh, this is a template, or this is how this code looks like, right? Or this is a format, or this is a POC, right? But also, how do I do that, translate that to content? Make sure that, oh, in case you are a code person, this is a POC. If you are a, you also just read and get to know it, this is a documentation on it. And that's like how I transitioned. But when I joined as a docs engineer or technical writer-ish, then a couple of conferences came up. I'm like, yo, I need to speak at this conference. I'm gonna apply to ICFP. So I did that like once or twice, and then the company's like, yo man, like we got to talk about this. So maybe it's time just like fully go into DevRel proper.
That's
how I kept, you know, navigating it. I don't think there's a DevRel course. I mean there are several URLs of like DevRel communities and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't know, at least personally, I don't think I just jumped, I'm like, I'm going to do DevRel. For me, I just wanted to create content and write code. That was like, for me, the biggest thing, right? I suck at video content, so I wanted to choose a place I could do what I do best, writing.
Yeah, writing. Okay. And when you started writing, like the role at Storyblock was like your first docs engineering role, right? So when you started writing docs, did you have to, you know, learn some things? Exactly was the process for to ensure that, you know, you were delivering quality work? What did you have to do?
Yeah, so I was lucky to, I don't know how, I'm always lucky, but I was lucky to work with really amazing people at Storyblock. And one of that is my first manager. He was like very patient. And I also checked that this API technical writing or API documentation course, I'd rather be writing by this former Amazon technical writer. And that was like mind blowing. It's a lot to go through, but if you go through it and then you're done with it, your documentation skills get really, really up there. So I was lucky to go through that. I had like a budget for learning more technical writing or documentation engineering. So I bought like a lot of courses. I had like my evenings, probably like 9 to 12. They have like good work-life balance, honestly. Okay. So while I was like, so I just like finished like in 5:36. I'm like, okay, cool. I maybe go to the gym or I take a walk around. Then 9, I just learn through some of my courses.
Okay.
So the first 6 months, I was just learning, winging it. But I was still creating content. I had a great manager that was very open to, this is what you should improve on, this is what you should work on, these are tasks assigned to you. And I like to specifically know, what am I exactly doing, right? Like, what do you want me to do here? What is the goal? And so he was very patient with that. He was very understanding. He mastered all of that. And that helped a whole lot, right? Even my current role now, the lessons I've learned there, I'm using it to, you know, get better at the things I do now. Right now, I can define certain things. I'm like, okay, now I have to define the goals I want here. I am the one who decides, okay, this is what we are actually doing, and this is the reason why we are doing it, and this is how we're going to track all of that. And that's the lessons that I learned from my first two managers at Storyblok. Again, amazing people. So yeah, I had to learn a whole lot about API documentation, APIs, how to document certain things, what's the difference between a how-to guide and a tutorial, or an FAQ, right? Yeah, all of those things have like different meanings, and how you go about them are totally different.
Yeah.
And I had to learn all of those things. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I can totally relate to what you said, because I know that my work at Directors as well, I did lots of documentation, and I had to learn, I had to check what, you know, other people had, how they sounded, you know. So just improving my, you know, my writing as well. So even as a docs engineer writing code, I still had to improve the writing to ensure that I'm not using anything ambiguous. And the code samples also really, you know, relate exactly with what you're talking about. So understanding what the developers or the engineers have built, if there are new features, understanding it, knowing the right code samples to put at each section. So that's really how my experience as, you know, writing documentation was. And also in terms of developer relations, I know that it has kind of been a bit controversial. I remember sometime last year, 2 years ago, someone wrote how she's leaving developer. She made a video on how she was leaving developer relations and going back to full-time engineering. So what has been your own experience, you know, working in DevRel so far? Has it been good? What has been the good, the bad, and the ugly for you?
So I'm usually someone that tries to separate work and life as much as I can. That is so hard, by the way. But yeah, so first, to comment on the best things that are leaving DevRel to go back to engineering, I watched the video, and then I actually agree with some of the points she made, right?
Yeah.
When it comes to DevRel, there's very little pattern between your work and your personal life. For example, there are some things I can't comment on or talk about online, and this has happened on Twitter several times. My friends are like, oh yeah, this is happening, are you not going to talk about this? I'm like, nah, please no. I'm not going to do that, because no, like, this is going to come back later, please. I'm not doing that. Yeah, and then there's like a small distance, a very small thin line between when you talk about work stuff and then we're talking about, oh, this is my personal opinion. And at some point, I had to put opinions at mine, not my employer, because no.
Because as a devil, it's almost like you're the face of your company.
Exactly. And that's like one of the parts I don't enjoy about DevRel. Probably like one of the chillest parts. When it comes to coding, I still code as much as I do. I'm even like learning something entirely not related to DevRel or docs engineering. Yeah, I'm trying to like get back into building a whole new language or data engineering. So I'm learning something related to something totally different. Because I'm curious about data and, you know, like all of that. And anyway, so that's like one of the parts I don't enjoy about DevRel. Also, when it comes to like conferences, right? I used to enjoy going to conferences as a regular person. Just go there and just listen to other people, because I felt so chill, and I could ask questions that were hardcore. And now when I go to conferences, I'm the one that asking questions. It's like, what changed? Like, what do you mean by she come and look at yourself? But I mean, that's like, I mean, I'm not complaining, but yeah. Now I try as much as possible. Now it's easier to ask questions to other speakers, because they're really like either a speaker or someone knows you from somewhere, and it's so easy to talk to them. And yeah, I mean, that's like another part of DevRel. I'm like, maybe this could improve in the future. But yes, so honestly, Devrel to me is not just like a role per se. See it as just like you just being you. You're just opportunity to work with more customers, mm-hmm. right? You get to talk to customers. You have a responsibility to figure out or even direct in a way where the company goes, how the company responds to customers, and what people actually need from your product. And that's not a very easy thing, right?
Yeah.
And that's not such a very easy thing, really. But in a way, it really, really helps, right? Yeah, and I think more people should have seen it that way, then I'm thinking it makes the job a whole lot easier, right?
Okay, yeah, that's true. I think for me, DevRel is like a two-sided coin. It has its good sides and great sides, and it also has the sides that you have to somehow adapt to. You know, for me, as someone that's, like you said, you want to go to conferences, you just want to have, you know, a chill time, no one knows you, ask questions and go, but you know, you have to kind of be social when you go to conferences, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you also have to speak at conferences and, you know, the travel part of it, and just
the fact that
yeah, it can be a bit exhausting for me. I remember a talk I had to go to in February by train. We trained, it was about 5 hours, and that was long. So yeah, it can be very exhausting. But I think another thing is just knowing that you have to do a bit of everything. Yeah. It's for me, it's a love and hate relationship, because I actually like the fact that I do not have any monotonous work, so each day is different. But at the same time, it kind of just stretches me, because I have to, you know, apply to talk, make slides for presentation, work on documentation, create articles, create videos. So it's just like a lot. Yeah, those are some of the things that I think I had to adapt to as a DevRel.
Yeah, I mean, like, some days you also fight with GitHub Actions, but that's okay.
Exactly. Okay, so my final question, Fortune, is, I know you've given lots of great advice, but for anyone looking at you, you know, your journey, and just trying to start your journey as well, what's one piece of advice that you would give to them?
Yeah, get really familiar with the basics. I think I just my basics training. I even had to, like, at some point go back to learning certain things from the beginning, because I wanted to understand, okay, how does it exactly work? Also, I think before joining companies, like, this is really essential, right? Define what growth means for you. And this is something that I feel like more people don't do. We're always like, oh, I just want to get a remote role and everything is fine. But I mean, defining what growth means for you, it helps with the people you meet, how much you grow in your career and all that. And at the end of the day, for me, I was, like I said the other time, that for me, the finances part of, you know, roles are not exactly as big deals as how I define what I want to keep growing, like, geometrically.
Yeah.
So, like, my current role, some days I fight to GitHub Actions, like I said, and it's okay. And I debug a couple of things, and that's joy for me, and that's growth, yeah. Right? That's new things. So defining that matters. And all of that won't be possible if you're not very good at your basics, right? Your basics allows you to learn things on the go, pick up new things, or figure out what you did wrong. Sometimes we are bad at something, and we don't agree with it. And then when people point it out, I have to, like, pick it up. I'm like, okay, cool. Maybe I should do something here.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really essential. These are, like, the things I've learned over the years that I've corrected and I've, you know, done that better because of these lessons. Yeah. Also, have, like, great co-workers. Be excellent to your co-workers, your colleagues. You never can tell where your next opportunity is coming from. And people who will be, you know, working with you on that. Yeah, I've had to, like, join certain places, and I did even do interviews.
Mm.
Yeah, because someone just said, oh yeah, I've worked with him, it's chill. I'm like, oh, thank you, Jesus.
Yeah, the power of networking.
Yeah, I mean, like, but also don't go through it like, oh, I just want to network with this person. We tend up making it, I don't know, in my opinion, we're not, like, messing it all up when you go through that route, right?
Yeah.
Just, I just want to be a good person who works with this person.
Yeah, be authentic.
I just want to do good work here. Yeah, I just want to do amazing work here. I want to do my best here, right? And if my best is there, I have to learn more to do my best. Keep upping that best skill. And people notice these things, right? Even when things don't go as planned, people actually notice your work, right? And that's, like, some of the things that I think I'll point out to anyone who's, you know, out there that wants to go into the tech field. And this cut through not just the tech field, but I think most of life anyway.
Most of life. Yeah, that's really good advice. Very solid advice. Thank you so much, Fortune. Yeah. I've enjoyed our conversation and it has just been fun getting to know you more and, you know, your journey. So, yeah, thanks for coming on the podcast.
You're welcome. You're welcome anytime. This was fun. Let's do it again with harder teasers.
Yeah, harder teasers. No worries, we will. All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today on the episode. And I'll see you in another one. Bye.
Bye.